Hey friend, guess what? We have so many designers already inside the Design Business Accelerator, and they are leveling up their businesses for 2024. Do you want in? Come on over and join us. I am sharing everything that I've learned over the past 20 years and packaged it up in easy to follow lessons so that you can have the most profitable design business, the business of your dreams. If you want to level up your process, increase your profit, or even launch your business from zero, I've got you. I've got it all inside. So if that sounds like something you want to do, check our show notes and get the link. And I'll see you inside the Design Business Accelerator Toolkit. Hope to see you there. And on to the next episode.
Ever thought about starting your own business as an interior designer? Join Liz Levin, nationally published design entrepreneur of 20 years, as she interviews experts, colleagues, and creatives to pull back the curtain on the design industry. Whether you're passionate about design, eager to start your design business, or simply curious about what happens behind the scenes, we're here to open the doors for you. Welcome to Behind the Drapery Podcast.
Hello, friends. Today you're in for a treat as I welcome my dear friend and design superstar, Lauren Lease. When I met Lauren 13 years ago, we were neighbors at the DC Design House, and I loved her immediately. She radiates positivity, has endless energy, like religiously writing her blog at 5 a.m. while her toddler slept energy, and has that magical X factor that you can't quite put your finger on. As her design stardom grew through her books, product lines, TV show, and real estate endeavors, her authenticity and clear point of view in design stayed strong. She's a beauty inside and out, and a lovely friend and colleague that I feel lucky to have kept in touch with over the years as our careers evolved and sometimes overlapped in moments where we could catch up and high-five each other. Her design philosophy is not only about embracing imperfection, but celebrating it. Celebrating its raw, rediscovered, handmade, and homegrown, she believes home is a place where your story is woven into every worn edge. It's the embodiment of her belief that meaning and contentment aren't bought or achieved, but cultivated. It's a celebration of living each day intentionally, savoring the little things in life, be it a homemade meal, a bouquet of foraged flowers, a freshly made bed, or dancing in the kitchen. Home is a place that reminds her to slow down, let go, and be. So dear listeners, if you don't already know and love Lauren Lease, get ready to be inspired. Similar to her three, soon to be four, beautifully written and insightful books, we get into design, living, evolving in our careers, and even seed oils. Yep, you're in for a treat. Without further ado, let's jump into our next episode of Behind the Drapery with my guest, Lauren Lease, part two.
I love it. That's the fun. I mean, I joke that I'm winging it, but I love trying different things and seeing different avenues. Yeah. And we've built up all this experience. You get to know so many people doing this in the trades, clients. Yeah. That is fun. Like I said, once you're further in, I feel like that confidence builds and you can say, let me try that. And it is hard to scale, you know, like we, where we started. I mean, it is. I'm now trying to coach people getting into the business, which is
For that. You're perfect.
I feel like I've done that anyway with people in my, you know, so many. Sally and I used to call them baby designers that we would raise.
I love that.
Well, now I'm curious to hear more about. Tell me about the meadow and the what's happening. Like, I look on, I'm like,
where do we live?
Yes. Like, where are they?
We have moved so much. We moved out of our old house, the French one, into this house that we're calling the Meadow. We literally have to name our houses because our kids we don't know what we're talking about. Like, we literally named them and that's what we call them. So we moved into the Meadow before it was under construction. Okay. And at that time, we figured rather than renting while we built the Meadow, we would buy another house and live in it. And then we would flip it when the Meadow was done. So we're now living in the flip house. And we were only supposed to be there for 6 months. We've been there for 3 years this spring, putting it on the market in April. So we held on to this probably 2.5 years. This whole thing took 2 to 2.5 years longer than expected. Things got really, really held up in permitting. It was a hot mess. Fairfax County. And it was just a mess. They lost our permit. And it happened to a lot of people I actually know in the area. It was just that they were switching over systems. I don't know if you had any jobs going on at that time, but it was insane. It was terrible. But then also just stuff like, you know, our contractor being busy and subs thinking a job's going to take. I mean, our framing, which, you know, everyone thought 5 weeks, was 7 months. Seven months of framing.
Getting lumber or getting people or both?
They didn't show up every day, but I don't know. They're saying I've made a very complicated house. I don't know what to say. It's not that complicated, but we did. I mean, we've been told at this point that we should have just torn it down and built new. That's what they said. And I'm like,
that's not my jam. You're like, I don't do that.
But you know, they were like, it would have been in it by now. So it is what it is. We're just kind of like, this is not what we had planned. I'm glad we didn't know this is what was going to happen because we never would have, mm-hmm. you know, we're holding on to two house mortgages. So, I mean, that's not expected. Yeah. Like this is, and that's what I'm like kind of showing these YouTube things. Like I'm pretty real about it. I'm like, well, we bought another house. Like this has been stressful. I mean, it just is.
Speaking to a lot of people because, I mean, everybody must be going through this, whether from supply chain stuff or I've had clients shrink their entire projects, you know.
Yeah.
The footprint because it's just hard to get in all markets too. I've had friends that have moved to Park City, Utah, and they're like, holy smokes, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, just what's going on right now with inflation, like what these jobs are costing. We have so many clients who are just shocked by what the construction is costing. And I'm like, well, I'm not shocked at this point. I'm like, take your budget and double it. I mean, really, most people are usually half off at this point.
Really, yeah. Not much. That's huge when you're budgeting.
Yeah. So we will be finished. We will not be completed when we move in there, but we are moving there in June. We're selling our house. We're putting it on the market in April. And so, I mean, who knows though, the market's so slow. It may not sell. I may still have a nice place to rest my head for a little bit. I don't know.
I hear that there's not a lot of inventory for, you know, homes in the area. Yeah. The interest rates that were up for so long that everybody was just staying put. Like we all refied when the getting was good, you know, what I hear from my real estate friends, like there's no inventory for family.
That's kind of what they're saying. They're like, we have buyers. There are no sellers. So, I mean, in Great Falls, there's barely anything on the market. It's like, you know, it's just a handful. So I'm hoping that'll work, you know, to our advantage and that there are some people that, you know, didn't refi really low or just have to move.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But yeah, the goal is to move in and I'm sure it'll be like, you know, total construction when we move in.
So the meadow will be total construction. And that's your quote unquote forever home. You're hoping.
With air quotes. Yes.
No, I give you the air. No one can see our YouTube. But I'm not on YouTube. I'm on Zoom. Liz is on Zoom. No, I mean, forever home. But I feel like, you know, I finished a project in my own house. And I'm like, oh, what could I do? You know, I was saying to someone, I was like, we're used to building a beautiful home and then not really living in it long as we're doing it for other people all the time. So,
yes. And then you see all these cool things and you get new ideas and you're like, oh, I want to do this again. The inspiration boards that I have used for this one were from like my oldest Pinterest board that was like one of my first Pinterest boards. It just said dream house. And so it was super cool to be like, oh my gosh, I'm actually the architecture because we're redoing everything. I'm like, I can make this that original. So it's stuff that I've wanted for like, you know, like very, it's weird. It's kind of I'm calling it fairy tale modern because it's got like modern elements, but then it's very storybook and old fashioned and whimsical. There's moon gates inside the house and it's just very whimsical. And so on one hand, I tell myself, I'm like, I think if we left this house, it would be because we were totally leaving the area. Like, I don't think I'd do like, not that I think we're leaving the area, but I'm saying if I left.
Newsflash.
We're staying. But, you know, it'd be one of those, like, we would really be, I don't think I'd move to like another house around here. Because it's too much blood, sweat, and tears in this one.
Well, and also you know the area so well and your first house out there was so wonderful and the grounds and everything. So I feel like you've learned, I don't know, I'm putting words in your mouth. You got things you really loved about that place. And it sounds like this is that plus 10X, you know, all the land and the dreamy elements. And
we did. It's the combination of my two favorite houses. Is that one that you were at, the one with the geese? And then a more 70s contemporary that we had like a couple of houses before that. So I'm like, I'm marrying those two houses because I love them both.
I cannot wait to see it. Well, tell me some of the, I can't wait to see it. One and two, tell me some of the like really special fairy tale elements that you're building, like a couple things that are just out of this world.
Okay. So you'll like this. So I put an orangery on an addition on it. So this building it attaches to our now family room, which used to be our garage. And you go in And it has like 16-foot ceilings and vaulted ceilings. It'll have beams and a big fireplace at the end of the room. And you walk through a circular moon gate, like a hobbit door, to get into this. It opens up. And then it's glass on the sides with these really modern windows. So it's a stone. The wall you're facing is stone. Mm-hmm. And then the sidewalls are all glass. And they're 3/4-inch reveals of metal. Like, that's how tiny the metal in these windows is, Ottoma windows. And then you can slide, like, the glass doors sort of pocket open. They're like sliders, and they go out onto our vegetable, flower, and herb garden. And then on the back side, when you're looking back into the family room, you're looking at that circular door, and that's cut into the wall that goes up the 16 feet. And I'm doing built-ins out of stucco in it because it's supposed to be like the outside of the house.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to put like all my weird little like herbal books and like all my like herbs and all my like gardening supplies.
Oh my God.
I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm going to try to get vines, like, yes, a relief on growing over the bookshelves. Not real vines, because I think I'll kill them, but vines out of the stucco. So like when you look at that wall, I want it to look like the vines are growing up over the bookshelves.
Like kind of pressing them in. Like I saw something at the Kip Space Show, how they had plaster relief. They had palm leaves.
Yes, it would be over it.
I can see our hands right now.
I know. No. Man hands.
I mean.
Kind of hopefully growing up. So just like weird, I don't know. We've got hidden rooms that go behind bookcases and a hidden library. And we have another room that we're calling it Narnia. Like, it looks, we have an armoire in this house, and the armoire will be at the end of the hall. And when you open it, we're going to have a secret door in the back, and it goes into this big room that vaults up, and it'll be like the kids' playroom. And we're going to do like trees on the walls and call it Narnia. Like,
My gosh. Can you adopt me to come over? I want a moon door and all the things. Jeez.
All the weird stuff. So it's weird. I mean, it's just, I know, it's like I let like 8-year-old me have a really big hand in designing this.
That'll be the next book. 8-year-old me designed a house. Please see my moon doors and secret places. Oh my gosh, I love it.
Inner child decorating.
Child, yeah. I mean, that's why not, right? I mean, why take ourselves so seriously? Create that dream home. I mean, literal dream home, right?
It'll be fun, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
If it ever gets, you know, built.
All right. It's on its way. Now I need to go back and look and see where I've been following your story. Of course, I'm like, I need to see which stage of development you're in.
We're not even at close up. We've got holes in the walls. We've got rain coming in through the roof right now.
Oh, so you're going to camp when you're there, like get tents and stuff.
Like, it'll be intense. They are saying that we should have close up in 2.5 weeks. So that will change. So, but there's a lot that needs to happen, actually, be accurate.
Are the kids really excited? Are they having a hand in the design? Are they like, mom's got it, she's got the best ideas?
I don't know how much they care. I'm like, hey guys, you want to pick out your wallpaper? And they're like, eh, okay. And like, pick it up. I think they're excited. This is the first time they've actually wanted to move. They never want to move. I think because we're going back, like they've already lived there, and they're like, okay, we get to go back home. But they're not resisting this one. So I think that's excitement for it. They're so used to moving. They're like, okay.
Okay, mom. Yeah. And remind me, how old is everybody now? Go through the roster. We've got.
So Christian is 16. Okay. And then there's Justin. You're going to make me say this, because I might say these wrong, Liz. Justin's 14. Louis will be 12. And Giselle is 8. And Aurora is 6.
She's 6 already. Oh my
God. I know. They're about 2.5 or 3 years apart each. So
that's great. Well, I only have 2 out of the year total.
How old are your girls now?
Julia's 16 and Naomi is 12 and a half. I'm like,
oh my gosh.
I know. So I was pregnant with her when we did that DC design house, you know. Right? I wasn't there as much as I was supposed to.
You guys were both pregnant. You and Stuart were both pregnant. I remember that being like, oh my gosh.
What's going on over there? I hope it's not the same dad. Yeah. Yes. What kind of office is she running over there? No, that was literally everyone in my office, including my sister, was pregnant at the same time. It was like,
that is so funny.
My drapery worker was like, what's in the water? You guys need to move. We literally had an intern that kept my business alive that summer that everybody birthed. I mean, she documents to Sibley Hospital for me to sign. Katie, I need to have her on here too. She's now running her own successful firm too.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I know. I was fortunate to have all these rock stars, you know, come through my little incubator or whatever you want to call it.
Yes, I love that.
I mean, we make it work. You have all the, like, we're the CEO and the janitor, right? Like, I'm literally laying in bed and I'm signing off on something. Yes. Thank God she knew what was happening, because we were like,
Totally. I know. It is. Yeah, I would say things, that phase was crazy. Like, I feel like things are a little easier than that, I would say. Like, when I just, and I feel like.
Are more self. I feel that too. I now that my, well, and yours too, like, they could drive us around. We have our learner's permit. I mean, that's very different than trying to have a sitter or somewhere in order to leave the house every time you had to do something.
And
snow day, the whole world fell down. You know, it was so different. Yes. Feels totally easier. And I really like getting to know them as older.
I know. They're like little best friends. I love it.
I know. I love seeing your girls with you in the office and all that stuff too. I know they're involved and
they are, right?
Yeah.
They are actually helping and making some decisions. They're pretty funny. Like Giselle would be like, that's not yellow enough. I'm like, she's right. It's too cool.
You're right, honey. I'm glad you want to take over the business. Yeah. Do you have does anybody, either boys or girls, have any interest in design yet? Or it's too soon to call maybe, but.
You know what? Our 16-year-old, I think he wants to be a builder. He does. And I think Justin, our 14-year-old, might want to too. And Louie, I mean, they're all, who knows what they'll actually do. But right now the two boys are saying they both want to build, and the two older ones. And then Louie, the third one, is saying he wants to be a landscape designer.
Family business.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. You know, the girl, Aurora says she wants to do something with flowers, the 6-year-old.
Well, we could talk about that.
Yes.
A separate topic. Yeah.
Yes. they're all, you know, I think it's just, who knows?
Who knows? I know. I'm same.
Do they say they want to design?
Nobody wants to design yet, I have to say. So I don't know if that says about me. See, my oldest wants to be a dermatologist so we can all get free lasers and skincare. So,
That's great.
And my younger one likes to cook. So maybe she needs to move in with you guys, because I know you guys are all cooking and growing. Yes.
I love the cooking and the growing. And just, so does she cook for you ever?
Well, last night my eldest made us dinner, actually. And that was pretty nice.
That's we had shrimp
curry. Yeah, she's gotten into nutrition and food. She's avoiding seed oils. And I was like, all right. And like gluten and dairy.
Doing all those good things. I know. I feel like every day, you know, I'm like, there's not much we can eat anymore when you start educating yourself. It's kind of sad.
Well, yeah. Like, you were talking about something recently and I was like, I need to pay. Or someone had asked you some advice on, you reposted a question.
Then I word vomited. Like, oh, okay. Well,
I read it. I was like, I need to get. And also since my daughter's into it, I was like, I need to get into this. What's happening? You know, yes. And we have farmers markets and things, but now the regular groceries, not now, but the regular grocery stores are like, meh, with their meat and the whole.
Yeah.
And shows that basically make you want to go vegan. I was like, maybe I should be vegan. Like the meat production stuff is getting, you know.
I think, it's like, if you're not, I mean, the truth is vegan is still good for certain people. But I feel like if you are going to eat meat, it has to be from a small place where you know how they're, I mean, it's like the meat processing is so bad. You have to know where you're getting it from. They have to be humanely treated, like the whole thing. Like, the more you educate yourself, you're like, oh my gosh, like, what can we do at this point? Every time you go out to eat, like, of course you're not eating. We don't do this is a book I would recommend. Is Ultra Processed People. Honestly, one of the most life-changing books I read. We just now read the ingredients on the back of everything and we don't buy processed foods anymore. It's exhausting. I mean, it's really exhausting, but we just don't buy them. I thought, you know, it's funny, for years we've been eating organic and thought we were eating all these great things, but then you turn over the back of the ingredient. I've been buying hummus from the grocery store and it's like, okay, well, hummus has the seed oils and it's not always organic. And you just look at, and there's, you know, natural flavoring in it, which is now we know is not at all natural, and all these horrible chemicals for you. So it's like, we still kind of eat the same things we used to eat before, but now we have to make everything. So I make huge batches of things and I'm freezing stuff. And it's just,
how do you do that with all the kids and the business? I mean, you were saying this and we make hummus and I was like, I'm failing. I am door dashing.
I know that's what I do. So it's like a combination of that though. It's that. And then I'm like, okay, I'll go to the Brogue for the fourth time this week because, you know, it's like, I can't manage it. And so one thing I've been starting, which has been really good the past couple of months, I bought tons of glass, like Tupperware. I guess it's not called Tupperware, glass stuff for the freezer.
Yeah.
And on the weekends, I'll make like 4 meals and I'll make them for the future. Like I'll do like chicken pot pies and package them up and like pre-package for the weeks ahead. So if I remember in the morning to pull it out, we can come home to something that we can pop in the oven.
About being organized in advance is where I'm not. If you just invest a little bit of time on the weekend, you're set for the week when everybody's crazy. Yes. Driving now is like, but this back to your seed oil point, that's what my oldest and my husband got into this summer. And then we realized it is literally in everything.
In everything. Sunflower oils and everything. Canola oil. It's all in everything. Dave and I were actually talking the other day. Do you remember when did I ever tell you that I was doing that crazy like celery juice, like drinking like 32 ounces of celery juice for a really long time? I did that. And I really loved it. I had like, I would have like joint pain, like sometimes in my elbow and, or like my wrist, like certain things. And it went away when I was doing the celery juice, which was like a detox type thing. But I just, at a certain point was like, I can't keep this up. I did it probably for 2 years. We did it 2 years every morning.
How much? 32 ounces?
32 ounces. That we were doing 2 to 4 full stocks of celery per day.
Wow.
That's how much we were consuming. It was insane. And so some days I'd be like, I am so full from the celery juice. I can't, like, it was just too much.
Did it upset your stomach at all? Or is it?
At first, yes. It took a week to get used to. I started with 16 ounces. But anyway, going all to say all of that is, it's really funny. Dave and I just looked at each other the other day and I was like, you know what? Nothing aches ever. Like no wrist pain. Cause like when he would like lift weights, like on the bench, he had one elbow that was like messed up and neither of us had any pain, like no neck pain, no back pain, no nothing, because we haven't been eating. Well, we've still been eating processed foods because we still eat out at restaurants, but everything we can control, we've switched to not processed. And that I think has had such an effect.
Is that because of the inflammation? Because I was thinking out of nowhere, I have neck and shoulder pain from sleeping on my side. And I'm thinking, no, I realize I'm an old lady. I sleep on my side my whole life. Why am I suddenly having neck? I've changed pillows. I've tried 4 pillows. And then I'm thinking, well, now that you're saying it's maybe inflammation.
It's probably inflammation. So then just go and literally take a couple of weeks and don't let any of it in your body. They say 21 days for it to really get through. But I mean, we're not on zero processed foods at all. But what we can control, we're changing. Mm-hmm. And I think there's definitely a difference. Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely better. I mean, then you look, you know, those like reading like the blue zones and hearing about the blue zones and all that, like these people that are living, that are centennials, they're not eating processed foods, you know, they're now saying, I think they're putting processed foods. I heard this on Instagram, so I do not know if this is true news. they're putting it over like heart issues, putting processed food and diet over smoking. That's what it was.
They're
saying that they believe processed foods through like people getting diabetes and all these other issues is more than what cigarettes, like now killing more Americans than cigarettes. But I don't know whether that's true or not, but that was the statistic I read.
I've heard something similar and I probably need to take celery juice or Prevagen or something because I can't remember anymore, but I read something similar that was alluding to that, the same conclusion with processed foods and and we were sold a false bill of goods with everything, right? Like
everything's so greenwashed. I think that's what we're really realizing now too. It's so sad. We pick up stuff and we do a lot of our shopping on Whole Foods and we just, you know, it's delivery because we don't live near one. Mm-hmm. And so now I've learned you can go and zoom in and see the ingredients. But if you don't know what's in it, in the bag looks like, wow, this is, you know, vegetable, whatever. And some of that stuff is the worst offender of processed stuff.
Really?
But you can get like around here, non-processed cheese and, you know, all that, a lot of great stuff. We started making sourdough. We're just nuts. We've gone,
gone
crazy.
We just got a farmer's market and that's your next thing. It's like a whole lifestyle, you know? I mean, we have a farmer's market here where they sell pork from pigs that live in the woods. You know, they have pigs that they
like wild boars.
Yes. They brought
them. That's amazing.
Or somebody, I think, now the German thing, and maybe I'm inflated from a detail, but I thought they were German pigs that live in the woods here. And my husband's really gotten into it and going to the clean meat. Because I mean, the whole grass-fed thing and the pigs that live humanely. I mean, don't get me started on the pig farms, you know, North Carolina.
Yes. Yeah. I know. I'm very little on pork, but good to know that they're, I'll have to look into that.
They're going
to
eat it. Yeah. They had half forest lives before. Oh.
Yeah. It's so funny, but I don't know. I'm so sorry. We're supposed to have a design podcast and now I'm telling you.
I think it's interesting from design to, you know, it's a lifestyle, right?
That's you know, but it's funny. It really is. I joke. I'm like, gosh, I got really into decorating. That was sort of where my first job was. Because I'm like, okay, here's my house. Now let's make a job around it. But yeah. Then I'm like, oh, I really like, you know, gardening. And then you're like, no food. And it's like, you start showing those things as aspects of your business or what you're interested in because you love it.
Absolutely. And I think then you attract like-minded people that are interested and want to learn from you or join your movement, you know, follow what you're doing. Definitely with the food and all of that. The lifestyle thing is, I mean, Martha Stewart was one of the early ones, right? And
then, oh, yes.
I mean.
She knows what to do.
But then there's so many others from some that you mentioned, you know, and like, I feel like Henderson does that too. She's great.
Yes. And it just ekes out like this meadow has really opened. I always loved gardening. Didn't think of myself as a gardener, but I've always loved gardens, creating gardens, you know, putting the walls up and growing the flowers and the vegetables. Now, as I'm getting educated in native plants and what true meadows are, I have this whole other side of me that is like, oh my gosh, gardens are actually kind of bad. Like it's this whole really interesting thing that I'm learning. And so it's like they're bringing in plants that do not sustain life as well as the native plants that were there before did. Nothing's worse than lawn, than, you know, perfect grass. This is really what I'm learning because we have this property is 7 acres of pastured grass and it was mowed. And so what I've been realizing through my research, originally I'm thinking, oh, I just want to get some, you know, flowers in there for biodiversity, attract the bees and da da da. I'm reading all that. Now I'm realizing what we have is incredibly invasive and you have to try to get rid of it. And so it's just interesting where sort of an aesthetic desire to be like, I want to look out at pretty flowers and bring some bees and butterflies has now turned into like, oh my gosh, did you actually know you're kind of hurting the earth when you have all this grass because it's what's called like a dead zone for animals and they can't actually thrive. And so now our goal with that is sort of, as I've been getting educated on like what we should be putting in there and how to get more life to be able to thrive on our property. It's like this whole other, you know, aspect of,
absolutely.
I wrote a kid's book about it. I'll have to send it to you, but it's like very, you know, just interesting how aesthetics and beauty just really eke into almost like our sense of what's right and wrong to do here, if that makes like on the earth and what to do. And I think, you know, like that whole health aspect that is in when we design interiors, mental health, what that does for us. So
yes, for sure.
That starts that whole passion. So I think it's interesting how just interiors and aesthetics really branch into so many aspects of life and open up little pockets where you had no idea you'd be interested in. And then you kind of go there.
Well, and it's home and we evolve in our home. Our families evolve, our interests evolve, your sort of understanding of the world and respecting the rest of the world when you were raising children, I think evolves. You've described that beautifully, I think. And like your interest in always being outside and gardening and all of that have now expanded into more of kind of like global consciousness too, I think. That's like really sweeping, but I mean, that's what I feel like when you're mothering and growing and maturing in your life and your business. But yes, but aesthetics and home are a place where it starts and being more responsible in our homes.
Yeah.
And all that I think is more of at the forefront than when we were starting 20 years
ago. Yeah. And it's like funny, you know, we thought we were being responsible. And I mean, people will tell you, I'm telling you with the internet, they'll tell you anything. I mean, this sounds really stupid, but I didn't know balloons were bad. Okay. I didn't know this. I really didn't. So I had like, you know, and I love the environment. I love it, but I didn't know balloons were bad. I just, obviously, if I logically think about it, okay, yeah, that doesn't make sense. They're one-time use, like takes thousands of years to dissolve. Didn't think about it. So
what if they fly off into the sky at the shopping center when your kids let go? Like then what happens?
I didn't know. And I remember I posted, I made one of those for my sister's bridal shower. And I showed a picture of my living room with one of those balloon garlands, you know, with like all the balloons. And I was like, oh, here's my God. And someone was, I got people, I'm unfollowing you right now. I'm unfollowing right now. And I'm like, gosh, why? Like, I don't know. And then someone said like, this balloon's disgust. You're disgusting me or, you know, the balloons or this is, you know, whatever. I would never expect this from you or something. I'm like, Lord, I'm like, oh, okay. Balloons are bad. Okay. Got it, people, you know.
My gosh. I didn't know the balloons were that bad though.
Well, I didn't know like they're worse unfollows. So, but you know, I read about it. I'm like, no, you know what? If I think about my philosophy, it doesn't actually jive with my philosophy. But I didn't know it. I mean, that's the thing that I find so interesting. And that, I guess that can be what's so scary about the internet is,
right. You
know, people can turn hate on you so quickly for not knowing, because we're all just really trying to educate ourselves. I mean, I got that similar thing actually about doing a fireplace in my kitchen at our new house.
I saw that actually. I did see.
Yeah. And people are like, you know, what are you doing for, like, how could you have fires? Fires are bad for the environment. And I'm like, okay. There are some things we're going to have to agree to disagree on here in terms of like what we're talking about here. So I don't actually necessarily believe that, but it's just interesting to see where
people are so quick to jump on you and cancel you or whatever. People are cancel culture, as they say. I don't know. They're looking for something and they feel very emboldened to jump out and attack you when we're not here knowing every single thing. We're learning and evolving, and you are educating yourself as you grow in this area. And I don't think you ever came out and said, I'm the expert in all things environmental.
No. I'm like, I love it. I don't really know how to take care of it yet.
It's all on you, Lauren. If you could save the planet, that would be great. Thank you so much. Not to be glib. I mean, it is an important issue, of course, but
it is.
The whole opening yourself up to others. You've been really brave on that front. I've always said, like, well, you've been able to do the blog and the sharing on the TV show and do it well and not come off as anything other than your true self. And I mean, you handle it well. The language, the messaging, the tone is very good. And a lot of people don't strike that tone well, I think, and they can get backlash. So the fact that you're getting people jumping on you and you are literally the nicest person on the planet.
No, it's just, it is. I just think, you know, and you can't read tone on there, but you can infer it. And I think that's actually, it's funny. I, however many years ago, came across, do you remember Gomi? Do you remember it was like, it was called Get Off My Internet.
No.
It's still there. It's a website all about just trashing and talking bad about people who have social media.
What?
And yeah. And I'm afraid to even talk about it now. They might come for me. and sometimes it's funny, you know. And I remember I like discovered it and I was like, oh man, like I hope I'm never on this thing. Yeah. And Domino had done a story on my house. They took pictures.
I remember that. That was beautiful.
Remember that story. And they told me, and I had to go like shop for a few things because I didn't like own, like I wasn't fully done. So I went to, I think, Bloomingdale's and used for the shoot and then returned, you know, kept the tags on, a $500 cashmere blanket. Uh-oh.
Here we go.
And yes. And, but Domino, the reason they had asked me to go, I guess, shop for some things or to link some things is they were using it to shop. So when their magazine came out, it said that my blanket was either $5,000 or $7,000. Can't remember what it was. And they wrote on there, that's what got me on there. Someone said, she needs to not spend so much money on her house. She should spend it on her fangs, on her teeth.
Oh my God. Told me this and I almost died. And I said, what are you talking about anyway? You have a beautiful smile, but who is this person?
Well, and I was just like, and honestly, my feelings were really hurt at first.
Yeah,
I really was like gut punched. I was like, oh my gosh. And it bothered me because the things that they were even saying weren't even true. I'm like, well, it didn't. I'm like, first of all, it cost like $500 something and I actually don't own it. Like they needed me to get it for the shoot.
Called styling. Yeah,
exactly. But then it was like, you know, $5,000. So it's just like, it was just this weird thing. I'm like, oh my God, like I would never buy
I had any idea. I know. Right. Like
I got the thrift store people, like, you know, but it was just, It was an interesting experience. But then I sort of wrote a funny blog post about it. And I was like, they found me. And I kind of like laughed it off because I was like, you know what? You just have to at that point. And then some of them went back and like they had written some nice things and it was fine. Like it was totally fine. But that experience was really good for me because I think you have to learn to not care positively or negatively what the social media reactions are, because you might get in a day in the beginning 100 people saying that they love you and they love what you're doing. And one person's like, well, that's ugly in that. And it hurts and you're affected by it. So it's like, no, it was a good lesson in you can't let that stuff get to you positively or negatively. Obviously you'd be grateful when people are nice, but like, you just got to let things roll off. So that was something, I don't know, maybe like 15 years ago. I don't remember how long ago it was, but at first I was like, why is this happening? And I was like, you know what? That made me tougher because I can take a lot now. And then having a TV show and stuff, you need to be able to take it. So it's like,
skin.
Let's talk.
full circle to the art of not giving an F. I mean, that's
exactly
that. You've just encapsulated it and brought it full circle. You did. It's true. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, we hang on those negative for whatever reason. I think our brains are wired to do that. I forget the exact psychological reason, but you can hear 100 compliments and then the one that really stings, you're like, wait a minute. And then I ruminate on that stuff. And
if you let it,
especially if you're putting yourself out in the public eye, it's hard. You have to develop that rolling off your back thing.
Yeah. And if you don't, I mean, there are times when things have hurt me, I feel this desire to recede and say, well, I'm not going to share anymore. I'm stupid for putting myself out there. And you start to go and you're like, no, you're crawling yourself into a little hole. And it's like, no, you can't do that. You just have to do your best. And it doesn't affect me in the way it once did. But if you're not on it or you're not, at your best, like it can still hurt and it can still do things. So you have to stay vigilant in a way to just like exhale, who cares, and laugh.
Because I think it's great that you ran at it with your blog where you can control your message and be like, and have your audience that knows and loves you, wrap their arms around you and support, remind you, well, this is one individual that is clearly having a bad day. It says more about them than you, to be honest. I think takeaway from that book.
Yes, I think that's true. I think it's, for me, this funny. I don't necessarily mind if someone doesn't like what I did on social media. I'm like, that's your opinion. That doesn't even affect me. I'm like, oh no, totally get it. I can see how this is ugly for you. Because I like some ugly things. But I think the thing that does bother me is when it's a mistruth out there.
Yes.
Like that's when you're like, because I normally try not to interact. I'm like, oh gosh, I don't want them actually thinking something that's not true. Like when they were like, oh, that costs this much. I'm like, no, it doesn't. Because you're like, oh wait, this is not unnecessary. It's like,
oh, well, you feel misunderstood. I hate that. No, that's not accurate. Yeah. And I want to tell you what's going on for real.
This was the worst one. Mira did a thing with Washington Post. And she was like, what are 5 things you need to get rid of now in your house? Uh-oh. And so I listed old towels as one of them because they can get really ratty. And we give our old towels. I have an aunt who does foster dog stuff. So they accept old towels.
Perfect.
But then the comment section, the Washington Post, man, they were like, who is this woman throwing everything away? And I'm like, first of all, did it say that you're throwing it away? Like there are things that are needed. It's just, Washington Post readers are crazy,
They're ready. They are ready to pounce. Yes. I know that's intimidating. And I've found in social media when I've dipped my toe into social events that were happening, like big culture, Black Lives Matter and important events like that. I've found that I'm going to stay in my lane I feel like everybody at one point, and that's just one issue, but on many issues, I decided I'm not a news outlet and I'm not here to be an expert, obviously. But I think when everyone had a platform and was feeling they wanted to share their opinions on what's going on, things got a little dicey for folks. Not necessarily me. I mean, but I feel like there were comments and stuff during the time, and especially with COVID and everything, I thought, I'm just going to, I don't want to seem indifferent, but I'm going to stay in my lane of I'm doing houses and this is my work channel. I don't know if that's irresponsible or not, but it's really hard to put yourself out there with differing opinions.
I don't think it is. And I think for me, I'm like, well, who cares what I think? It's like great if you care, that's nice. But I don't know. I think that things did change in COVID because, we were all stuck in our houses and it almost felt like people then believed that everyone had a duty to take a side on every single issue that ever comes up. And it's like, because I mean, I read this stuff and I'm like, well, I don't want to read about, I really like, where's your cow or whatever that I'm calling you for, your funny dog. It's just interesting that how things have changed where it's like you have to go out there and say things. And it's just, I don't know. I've actually found that really challenging.
Because if you're silent on important issues, and a lot of important issues have come up in the last few years, I feel like more intensely.
You can't win if you're silent, and you can't win if you say anything. That is the one thing I've learned. So you just have to sort of pick your poison, and maybe it depends on your mood. I'm like, if you're feeling feisty, say what you want. If you want to get beat down, don't say anything. I mean,
right? So temperature check that day. I mean, I follow an illustrator who now sounds like a civil activist on all issues, and I'm not against that at all. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, she's getting it sides all day long, and she's a wonderful illustrator. I mean, kudos to her for speaking her mind and taking all that on. It intimidates me personally, because again, as a people pleaser and a person that avoids conflict. I found that really stressful to have people reacting to my thoughts, but also didn't want to be silent on those important issues that were coming up at the time. But I think it's changed again, because then people were like, really? Posting a dumb, meaningless thing? Then what help is that? I'm like, you're right. What help is that? So I don't know what to do, you know?
I know. I don't even know if there is. I think you just do your best, because it's
we're all not.
And we don't have the blueprint here. And it's a different world, though. It really, really has changed. I mean, and just from when I started blogging to where it's at now.
Can you imagine blogging now as much as you did then, with more people feeling empowered to talk back?
I cannot imagine.
Back to you, I sound like a mom, but, you know, really challenge you.
I could not imagine. I mean, I remember I once got my feelings hurt because they said they didn't like how I styled my bookshelf. I couldn't have handled it back then. Let's put it that way.
I can't handle any criticism. I mean, obviously I can handle some, but I take it personally too. And I want to defend myself. It's hard. I could never be famous and have the whole world critiquing.
Oh no, I do not know how they do it. It's hard, especially when, you know, people have, like, people, you know, commenting on their kids and all that. I don't know how people do that.
We just consume the celebrities, right? And we kind of, it's amazing that these people survive that process.
It's really.
Culture consumes them and wants to spit them out in a lot of ways. Build them up and tear them down.
It's so true. It's so true.
Well, this is a random way to end it then, but I feel like you promised me an hour and I've gone over, because I could talk to you all day long. But
same, Liz.
I feel like this has been such a fun and interesting conversation and catching up with you. And thank you for sharing all of your experience and wisdom. And I know a lot of people are going to glean important information out of that and hearing your journey.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for being here, my superstar.
You're my superstar. Thank you for having me. You're meant to do this. You're always so easy to talk to. Thank you. All right. Big hug.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Behind the Drapery, where we pull back the curtain on the interior design industry through stories, insights, and creative processes that shape the spaces we create. Make sure you subscribe to get the latest episodes from your favorite podcast platform, and visit our website at lizlevininteriors.com for more information.